Welcome to the Mavs Fans for Life podcast. I am your host, Landon Thomas. I am joined by Sean Vaz McConney and Kendra Dunson. It is a not so great episode the way the Mavs have been playing, but we will be talking about their road trip, and there might be two returning players coming back tonight against Atlanta Hawks. So let's get into this road trip. I feel like we should play some sad music right now. The road trip was there you go, Shadow.
That's more like clown music.
Oh man. Were y'all scared of clowns growing up?
Yes, I'm still deathly terrified of clowns.
So the movie It.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask. Y'all can't watch it. Well, obviously Shaun of Oz.
Never seen it, never watched it, never will watch it.
Oh.
Yeah. Red balloons scarred me because of that movie. I was like, oh no, I don't want anything bad to happen to me. That means the clown is gonna come out and get me.
Oh no.
So it's traumatizing.
So Kendra, what would you do if you saw a red balloon just floating in the air?
I go the other way.
Just like, calmly just walk. Yeah. Okay, I'm just gonna go that the way right here.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into, speaking of horror, let's get into this road trip that the Mavericks were on. 1-4, they lost to Oklahoma City Thunder, Los Angeles Clippers, and then the Blazers back to back, literally in 2 days. So, Sean Vaz, I'll start with you. Just what's your overall assessment on the road trip itself?
I mean, it was awful, right? I think there was an understanding that, especially on the second night of a back-to-back in Portland, that Luka wasn't going to play. I think you kind of could have penciled that in as a loss for all the roster inefficiencies that the Mavericks have and that we've talked about a lot. I don't think the Mavericks have won a game this year with Luka not playing. So I don't, there was no reason to assume otherwise that they would have won that game. But you look at, the game against the Thunder, the game against the Clippers. I mean, the Mavericks, the score looks a lot better than it was. I mean, this team is obviously struggling. Luka and Christian Wood, and to some extent, Spencer Dinwiddie are really the only key, players that are playing well. The whole Tim Hardaway Jr., is the savior and is on his hot streak is kind of out the window, right? I mean, you see it a couple times, a month, and other than that, he's the streaky shooter that we all know him to be. Even the double time or the double overtime win against the Lakers. I mean, other than that, outside of that Luka Doncic shot, and some very, very questionable officiating, you could make the case that the Mavericks should have lost that game. Giving up a 19-point lead and having it come down to the fourth quarter and still having to go into double overtime. I mean, this was a team last year that, when they built leads, they prided themselves on their defense, right? Jason Kidd preached defense. And now this team blows leads every week, it seems. And it's huge leads. It's not, a 7-point lead here, an 8-point lead there. It's 19, 20, 21-point leads that this team can't sustain. Now, whether that's the fact that they're missing players or whether that's the fact that this team just isn't, good from, the same team that they were last year, which is weird because from a defensive standpoint, the only person you're really missing is Jalen Brunson, who wasn't, a great defender by any means. So, there's a lot to be said about, what Jason Kidd has done for this team over the last 2 years. But you look at this year, especially into 2023, that you can talk about what he hasn't done. And on the defensive end, that's kind of what the calling card was for this team last year, and they don't have the roster to keep up offensively with some of the best teams in the NBA. So they've either got to shore up their defensive awareness or we're in for a rude awakening come playoff time.
You definitely hit the nail on the head, but I want to ask Kendra, do you feel like Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green are, once they come back, likely tonight, even if not, but once they come back, do you feel like the defensive breakdowns will shore right up, or do you feel like there's still some discrepancies with the defense overall with this team?
They, I mean, they're definitely going to stop some of the leakage that's happened.
Maxie too, but that's
of course.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, looking at, you know, Finney Smith and Green, what they have in common is that they're both active on defense. Green specifically, he is very active with his hands. I feel like out of all the players on the roster, he's the only one that, as far as like a, you know, transition player, he kind of does that just based on his defense. And since the Mavericks don't really go out and transition and get the easy points, Green creates that for them. And he does that by being active on defense, you know, running from behind, grabbing the balls and just disrupting the offense and all these other things. And so that's what they need, just hustle plays. Teams that, or rather players who can guard multiple positions, they don't really have that. Dinwiddie and Luka doesn't, they don't really scare you as far as defenders. To me, they're like yin and yang. They don't, you know, as far as like ability, they're like right there. But with Finney Smith, you know, you can switch him. He can guard a guard. He can guard, you know, forwards and bigs and things like that. You can move him around. The same with Green, you know. And so he has the athletic ability. And also he's still learning the game as well. But he also just, they both have a natural talent as far as being able to defend on the ball. And, you know, with them being out and really not really having other players to step in that role, you know, you see what the Mavericks look like when they don't have two of their best defenders out there. So having them back is going to be an upside for them, because currently they're ranked 25th in defense. So they need all the help that they can get.
Yeah, 25th in defense. And just to point that out, Sean Avaz, I mean, we talked about this. Like, what do we think the Mavs need, or what's the wish list? And I mean, we both said, what, two-way player defense, and then yep, obviously a defensive big, a starting big next to Luka and C. Wood. But what's your thoughts on some of the stuff that Kendra just pointed out with the defense?
I mean, she's 100% right. I mean, this team is, you know, missing Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green is huge. And even Maxie, right? And unfortunately, we don't know when Maxie's coming back. But, you know, you're talking about three of your best defenders, right? Not three of, your three best defenders, right? I mean, those are your three anchors on the defensive end of the ball. You know, and it's unfortunate, because without them, you're having guys like Dinwiddie and Hardaway Jr. And even Christian Wood to some extent, you know, kind of, I don't want to say play out of position, but really take on a different defensive mindset and a different defensive identity, right? This entire team has, and all their lineups that they're throwing out has. So without, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green, you know, as your two primary on-ball defenders, you're having guys like Tim Hardaway try to cover Kawhi Leonard, you know, in the Clippers game, even without Paul George, you know, game that the Mavericks arguably should have won. You know, you're having the last few opponents, there's been at least five players that have hit double figures against the Mavericks. I mean, that's other than the Lakers, and that was the only win, you know, in these last few games. So that's insane that the Mavericks are allowing more than two to three players hit double figures against them. You know, with guys like Dorian and Josh Green, you take that liability off of Spencer Dinwiddie and Tim Hardaway Jr. and let them focus on what they need to do, and that's score. And Landon, we've talked about it. Kendra, we've talked about this, you know, a bunch, is Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, for all that, you know, the talent that he's been gifted, is a streaky offensive player and is much better in just a catch and shoot kind of opportunity. If he's got to defend on one end, come back, try to get set, try to run a play. I mean, it doesn't work, right? That's not his forte. When you reinsert guys like Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green into the lineup, you allow the rest of these players to play their game. So it'll be interesting to see, especially tonight, with against an Atlanta team that is also kind of figuring out their identity after, you know, struggling. It's going to be interesting to see whether the Mavericks can really take advantage of that with two of their best defenders back.
Yeah, if you look at just the games on the schedule, I mean, they're not playing defense at all. I mean, if you look, let's see, the last time they held an opponent under 100 points, even 105, let's see, would be December 21st against the Timberwolves. That's not good. Even if
they still had 99, like, you know, the Mavs only scored 104 yeah. in that game. So it's not, you know,
and that's why I asked Kendra, I was like, is Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green going to shore up that defense? And it will, but it's not, they still have leaps and bounds to grow defensively. And I think it's just a personnel thing. I think, like you said, Sean Navaz, I mean, those three guys are the defenders. Bullock is okay defensively, but those three are, you know, primary defenders on your team, and the rest are offense. And you got to have more of a balance on the team. And I like Luka and Christian Wood. Obviously, everyone does. I even like Spencer. I think he's a fringe. He could be a solid starter, or he could be a top two, six man in the league. But if you have those three guys, even Christian Wood, he's growing defensively. If you have those three guys as your primary guys, you got to have great defenders in the starting lineup that you surround those guys with. And then your defensive center has to be anchoring the paint, and also he can be versatile in the pick and roll situation on the perimeter. Because if you see a lot of the teams, they do fast break points. They score in the paint. That's some of their weaknesses on this team, is they're just going at the rim at will. And Christian Wood, he does good blocking shots or altering shots, but when he's at the center, they're kind of thin. So that's why they put Powell in there, so he can guard some of the bigger guys, but Powell's not a defensive center. So the strategy works if you can replace Bullock, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Powell with some primary defenders. And I think you will with Dorian Finney-Smith coming back and Green playing a lot of minutes, but you still got to find a defensive anchor in the center position. So, Kendra, I'll ask you, just overall, what's your thoughts on, you obviously talked about the defense, but is there anything else that stood out to you on that road trip?
The bench depth, you know, I know that injuries obviously played a part into it, but just looking at the roster and just, you know, having to go deep into rotation, it's important to find who can elevate when Luka is not on the floor. And I think that's probably the most important thing for the Mavericks to find, the non-Luka minutes.
Yeah, when they're missing Luka, the team is 0-5. And I even tweeted that out. I feel like just the team is solely dependent upon Luka. And I'm not saying this in a negative way or just the teammates. Like, they have good teammates in Dallas, and I think injuries do play a part in that. And they have good players in Dallas. I just feel like the responsibility, you know, the usage is going to wear on Luka. I mean, he's 23. Yeah, he's been playing professionally since 16, but all these players have been playing since they were 16, you know, elite basketball. They weren't playing at the lowest level in high school. So it's, and he's only 23 years old, and he's resting games, resting back-to-backs. That's, I mean, Dame Lillard was playing in the back-to-back, and he has injuries, and he's older now. And I'm not saying that the strategy is wrong, but he can rest games. But the problem is the load that he has on this team is you're going to find him resting more games, and they don't have the personnel for him to rest games. Like, Kendra, you just mentioned it, the rotation has good players, but when those players are missing, you're filling in, you know, guys like McKinley Wright, you're filling in Theo Pinson, you're filling in JaVale McGee, you're filling all these guys who in a healthy roster wouldn't play. So it's tough when you see teams like Bucks or the Celtics or, I mean, you know, when they miss stars, they still are competitive. And that's something that I would like to see as well, is just making sure you have some quality finds in the bottom tier of your roster, because you are going to have Luka miss games and you have to be prepared for that. Shanavaz, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Landon, the Mavs are, what, 0-5 when Luka misses a game? The Mavs can't afford not only for Luka to miss games, but to miss shots. I mean, you know, unless he's putting up 30 points, Mavericks are 2-8 this year.
When
he doesn't average 30. I mean, that's wild to me.
That's insane.
Wow.
That's completely, like, just think about that. Like, this team has won two games when your superstar doesn't put up 30. It's mind-blowing to me that we don't have enough players to put more points up on the board. Like,
so what do you think that is? Do you think that's because he has to, or do you think it's a coaching deficiency where you can explore more plays for Dinwiddie, for Wood, for, you know, and lessen the load from Luka?
Yeah, I think there's a complacency with the coaching staff, right? I think when you have a generational talent like Luka fall into your lap, it's very easy to ride him and you know, have him carry the team, right? And we've, you know, we've talked about this so much that, you know, Luka needs a second star, and the Porzingis deal was to try to get him, and they didn't mesh because Porzingis wanted the ball more, and Luka, you know, by all accounts, they were fine together. It didn't work, right? The system didn't work. But this is how Luka's played his entire life, right? He's always been the primary ball handler. He's always been the guy that takes over. I think from a coaching aspect, it's easy to fall back into that and say, you know what? Yeah, if that's what he wants to do, we'll just do it, because he's so talented and he's so gifted that he can, and we can get away with it during the regular season. But when it comes to postseason basketball, and when it comes to playing teams like Kendra mentioned, like the Nuggets, like the Grizzlies, who have so many other pieces around them, if Luka's not scoring 30, this team's not going to win a game in the postseason. It's going to be very difficult for this team. And so I think even when Luka's on the floor, I think Jason Kidd and the coaching staff have to do a better job of, Landon, like you said, running plays for Spencer Dinwiddie, running plays for Christian Wood. It shouldn't just be Luka at the top of the key. Here's a pick and roll. Luka drive. Luka kicks out. Or it shouldn't be like it was at the end of the Lakers game, which was so frustrating, where Spencer Dinwiddie or Tim Hardaway Jr. have the ball, they pass it off, and that person, whether it's Bertans or whether it's Bullock, they just pass it back to Luka and say, "Hey, we'll stand here. You do what you want. We're waiting for the ball." Like that's you're never going to win a championship that way. And it's I love this team to death. So it's so frustrating to watch, because it's like, you know what you need to change and you don't do it. And I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's just a schematic, you know, kind of the way Luka wants to play, and they're just, you know, the Mavericks are just giving into it. But I think there has to be some sort of give and take on both sides, where both player and coaching staff have to come together and say, look, this is not conducive to winning, right? You put up your stats all you want, right? That's great. Win MVP. But you know what? You're not going to win a title. We're going to do what we can. The Mavericks have to come out and say, you know what? We'll do what we can. You want, you know, Luka doesn't have to be a recruiter by any means. He doesn't have to be LeBron and try to get, you know, whoever he wants to play with him. But the Mavericks, clearly, as we've talked about, have to do better of roster, you know, in terms of roster construction. But Luka also, to some extent, I'm not saying get his teammates involved, because he does that, right? Luka makes so many incredible passes, and the shots just don't fall, right? This team can't hit those wide open shots when they get them off of passes from Luka. But there has to be some sort of, you know what, I'm going to let Spencer run this. And rather than Luka standing in a corner, move him around a little bit more, right? Have him cut to the basket, not just standing on the wing or standing at the three-point line and letting Spencer initiate the offense on the other side of the floor. Like, it's so infuriating sometimes to watch, because when that does happen, it's so beautiful when the Mavericks are swinging the ball all around. And we've seen it in some instances, right, where the ball is swung all around, you know, the arc, and it gets to a wide open guy and the Mavericks hit a shot, right? But then we've also seen like the end of the Milwaukee game a while ago where they knew exactly what play they were going to run. And even the end of the Laker game, everybody knew it was going to be a Luka step back three. The Lakers just didn't defend it well or didn't, you know, decided not to foul. So it's, I think it's a two-way street. And it, you know, it's going to be interesting to see because it's really going to determine the future of this team and how far they can advance in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to take this time out to talk about Chop Shop Victory Park. Make sure y'all check them out. They're right outside the AAC. Really good food, great customer service, and really good drinks as well. Make sure y'all ask for the drink specials during Mavs home and road games, not just at home. I go there sometimes before games and then also on the weekends. So make sure y'all check out Chop Shop Victory Park.
Kendra, what's your thoughts on that? Do you feel like he has to do that, or do you feel like there's some leeway where he can allow others to have more responsibility on this team?
I think two truths can be, or rather hold for this particular situation. I think also Luka just recognized, you know, his teammates' abilities and strengths and weaknesses. Mm. And he understands that, you know, however much I can give is how far this team is going to go.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the other teams in a Western Conference, Denver, you know, you know who's over there. You have Jokic, you have Murray. Memphis, you know, you have Morant, you have Jaren Jackson, you have Bane. You know, Sean Navas guy over there. You have the Pelicans. You know, you have outside of oh my gosh, I'm going blank.
Zion.
Yes, CJ. Zion. You CJ.
Brandon Ingram.
Valanciunas is a beast.
Right.
Like Alvarado's a
He's
menace.
Really good.
But why can't we say that about Luka, Wood, Dinwiddie? I mean, some of those guys.
They're
putting
why.
Up good numbers.
Hey, maybe we're looking at it too closely. You know, maybe we are like, you know what, let me step back and watch other teams play, because maybe sometimes we're in our own yard and we're coveting somebody else's yard and we're like, man, their grass is green and da 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 da. So maybe that could be the case. But I love Christian Wood. I love what when the team or when possessions go to him, and I love when he's aggressive. He's not just taking a three, but he's actually going to the paint, and he's doing all of this because, I mean, when he does that, it's hard for defenders to defend him. I mean, it's that simple. I love when Dinwiddie, again, he decides to be aggressive and not settle for the step back. His game kind of mirrors Luka, but it's just, it doesn't always yield the same results as Luka's. But nevertheless, I like it when he's aggressive. Outside of that, I mean, what are you getting? Jaden Hardy, he's raw. I mean, I know that
the talent's there, though. I mean, that kid
he's there, but he's also inconsistent. I mean, he has his moments of flashes, and you're like, wow, I really see it. He is he can create his own shot, but also, you know, it's still new to him, you know, so I'm not going to put all that pressure on him to be that third guy. But it would be nice to see him play more important minutes to, you know, alongside Luka and Dinwiddie, and just to see how he can flow in that space rather than, you know, him playing alongside like Pinson and other players. Anyways, as far as the coaching staff, I mean, Sean Navas, I really think you hit it on the head. I mean, they're a little complacent. I think last year, I wouldn't call that a fluke. You know, I'm not going to say that, but I think it, I don't know. It's hard to, I can't say that they expected that themselves. You know, I don't know what their expectations was for last season, but you know, I know they had a, great confidence on that roster, and I knew that they had gone into the Jazz series that they had great confidence. Going into the Suns and all of that, they had great confidence, and going to the Warriors, they had all of that. I don't know where the confidence is at as far as this team. I know it starts with Luka, and I know that Luka feel like he can win on against any team on any night. But, you know, you can have all the confidence in the world, but if your team isn't to the level of where they need to be, then, you know, a more talented team is going to beat you.
I really, you know, Kendra brings up a good point. When we get Dorian and Josh Green back, right, it'll be interesting to see how they play with, you know, tonight in Atlanta. But I think Josh Green adds another element, not just defensively, but really adds to the kind of aggressiveness of this team, right? We've seen Christian Wood, especially in the last few weeks, really become more aggressive and really become more decisive with the ball on the offensive and defensive end, right? He's done a great job of really improving. But you can see the comfort level as kind of the season's gone on, especially as he's been in the starting lineup. He looks a lot more comfortable next to Luka, looks a lot more comfortable with Jason Kidd, with the team and things like that. And so I think adding another aggressive piece like Josh Green and then adding Jaden Hardy to the mix, like Kendra said, if he gets more minutes kind of as the season goes on, you've really got three guys that can really push the tempo and that can really be aggressive on the offensive and defensive end. Luka likes to take his time and you know, plays with a certain pace. And it's fine because when he does, he's arguably the best, one of, if not the best player in the NBA. But when you've got guys that can also push the pace that potentially can give Luka a break, you know, and really, you know, that you can count on them or rely on them to kind of keep the pressure up on the opposing team, whether it's offensively or defensively, I think that's going to be it's going to be huge for this team as, you know, as we get into February.
I have a question. So we're talking about Luka and like his ability to, I guess, to raise the ceiling for this team, like how far they can go, knowing that, you know, Josh Green, he can, you know, he's fast. He's a blur out there, maybe too fast for his own good. Same with Hardy, same with Hardaway, he can go out there. He loves to run and, you know, sling the ball across the place. So would it be on Luka to also play to the strengths of those players who can run and shoot at a higher pace? Would it be on Luka to say, hey, okay, let me push the pace and give it out to some of my teammates when the defense isn't set? I see that they are already running. Let me throw it to them and see what they can do. Instead of, no?
No, because it's Luka. I mean, he's top three player in this league. I don't think he can do that until he has a star player to do that. Like, I don't think he's going to change his offensive game unless there's someone that matches his level, or not even matches level, because obviously it's high, but just raises the bar of the talent on this team, like an all-star caliber player. That's when you can start changing your construction of the offense, because it's working now with him, but he's not an up and down player. And I don't think he'll do that unless he has a guy next to him who does that very well. Hardy, Green, and those type of players who exceed with that, just run and gun, just use your athleticism, play up and down. It'll work if Luka's not on the floor. And that's where the coaching comes into play, because that's where you can have a dynamic. You can have your starters play one way, like the Nuggets. Jokic, he does that. He's slow of pace, very methodical, break you down. And then once he's out, and you have some of the bench guys like Bones, Hyland, and all those guys come in, and Bruce Brown, you know, those kind of Hardy, Green, Hyland, Bruce Brown. I mean, you can kind of run the same thing where, all right, Luka's out now, so now let's push it. Now let's play different styles. And that's kind of hard to do, but because Luka is your offense, it's very Luka-centric, but you got to know your strengths. When Hardy's in and Josh Green's in, and Dinwiddie and Luka's out, you got to not necessarily change your game plan, but you got to say, all right, Young Bucks, start, go, just go, just go. Every time they get the ball, go. That's what coaches do. And I feel like
I was going to say, do you think they've been given
a green light? You can tell me to shut up, Kendra.
No, you're making great points. I see what you're saying. So that's why I said earlier, those non-Luka minutes. I mean, it's just as crucial to this team's success. Is
100% important. You know,
yeah, so do you think they've been given a green light? Right.
You know what a crazy stat is that I read? And this is, I was just, you know, kind of prepping for the pod, just kind of like to look up random stuff.
I love a good stat.
You know me, I'm a big stat guy. You know, that's how I like to mess with our boy Ian. So, you know, hopefully he's listening. But
shout out to Ian.
Shout out to Ian always. So the Mavericks score 14.8 points per possession more when Luka's on the floor than when he's not. Based on those numbers, with Luka on the floor, Dallas is a 54-win team. When he's not, Dallas is a 24-win team. That's astounding. Like Dinwiddie and Wood and Hardaway are good players, right? Like they're good. They're NBA players. They would not be on an NBA roster if they weren't. But the way that this, I don't know what it is, because it's and in some of it, you know, Kendra, your question regarding, you know, how does that work with Luka, right? Does he need to take more of a charge of saying, hey, I'm going to play at a faster pace? I agree with both of you, right? I think Luka can play with a faster pace, but Luka's game is predicated on him slowing down and kind of reading the floor and drawing people into him and coming off those pick and rolls and, you know, forcing people up into you know, uncomfortable defense that they're really not accustomed to, right? That's really his bread and butter, especially this year, you know, as he's gotten to the line more and gotten into the paint more, which has been great for him because his efficiency numbers are fantastic when he does that. But I also think for Luka, you know, you see the body language sometimes when he's playing with some of his teammates. And to Landon's point that he won't do that unless he knows that there's somebody else on this team that can match that. Luka's a competitor through and through, right? Let's not forget, this guy is a champion in Europe. This guy has been a winner since he was 16 years old. So he doesn't know anything else. And so I think when he plays with guys that I don't want to say are not lack talent, because that's not the right phrase, but guys that maybe aren't up to par with his skill set and maybe don't put in the same effort as he does. You know, we saw JaVale McGee get benched after Luka gave the coaching staff a dirty look and has barely played since then, right, against that game against the Nets. You know, we've seen, you know, certain, you know, Luka kind of manipulate and we've seen him throw his arms up when somebody takes a bad shot or really, you know, look lackluster when somebody does something that doesn't seem smart. So to Landon's point, I think until he gets somebody on that same level as him where he says, okay, you know what, it's you and me now. You know, I'm willing to change, but right now I think he thinks he's the only hope for this team right now, because he's seen it when he's off the floor. You know, forget when he's off the floor, when he's not even playing, this team can't win.
Well, then if that's the case, if Luka recognizes it, that, you know, hey, this is the team, you know, for better or worse, you know, I'm gonna give my best that I can every night, every possession. I'm doing what I'm supposed to. And the players, you know, to a certain degree, they're doing what they can. I don't think they're purposefully going out there and just hoping to fail. That's just what it is. It comes back to the coaching staff and the front office to do something, because at this point, we're just trying on new dresses with the same team. And it's just, you need new players. You need different energy, new energy, new, you know, just better talent. That's all it is. And so it to me, it's the same question. It goes back to the same origin of their problems, which is what are the front office is going to do to help Luka. I know that Mark Cuban didn't like that artist painting that mural with Luka, you know, saying like, hey, send help. But I mean, that's it's valid. It's valid because at this point, what else do you want him to do? They're wringing out as much talent as they can, as much, you know, I don't know. I like, to me, it's like you, it's only so much you can do. If it's not Luka's fault, if the players are playing up to their potential and it's still not enough, then it goes back to the coaching staff in the front office. And you have to evaluate. You have to be, you know, you have to be real with yourself and realize like, hey, this is more than just trying to get Luka MVP. This is more than just trying to, you know, get butts in the seats. It's about winning. It's about winning. And we need to treat this different than how we did Dirk.
Yeah, I feel like there's two folds to that. I feel like one, it's what you really want. I think when you say, let's just say when an artist paints, please send Luka help, and you have a sign like that, I think that's disrespectful. I think to his teammates who live here and see that, it's one thing to say stuff on Twitter or online. I mean, you could say all you want, but when you're painting stuff in the city that these players might be going to grab something to eat. I mean, especially I know Maxi and Dwight, they're in the city all the time looking for new spots to grab food, but it's just, it's different. Like if you say Luka needs a championship roster around them, you can say that. But when you say please send help, Luka needs help. I mean, these are quality players. I mean, I think they're just playing one step above what the role is. I think Christian Wood is a championship player. I think Spencer Dinwiddie is a championship player. I think Dorian, Maxi, Green, Hardy, I like those players. I feel like they're just missing a true number two guy. I think that's it. And it's obviously hard to get because, you know, we've been wanting to see Luka paired to a true number two, and they tried it with Kristaps. But now when you trade Kristaps, when it doesn't work, it takes some time. And I'm not defending the front office. I feel like they could do better. I feel like Jason Kidd can do better. I mean, I gave him a C+. So I'm not defending them, but I'm just saying when you trade a guy, a max player that it didn't work out, it's going to take time to get a number two guy again. With the situation that they're in. And I feel like that's, they're on the track to do that. And it's just going to take time. And I feel like it's a very important time right now to try to keep the good players that they want to see around Luka, and then try to either maximize the trade value of the players that you feel like you can get upgrades, or just get the best salary contracts you can to eventually get players in free agency. And that's what they're in right now, because draft is not going to do much. Let's be honest, they lucked into Jaden Hardy and Josh Green. I mean, he's good and he's a good young piece, but They could have lucked in by choosing some other players behind them. So it's, I feel like there's two folds when you say Luka needs help and there could be a better. A roster to contend for a championship. I don't know. What do you think, Sean Navas?
Yeah, I mean, look, the roster inefficiencies I think everybody has touched on. I think the one thing, you know, I'm just thinking back in my head, looking at championship contending rosters the last few years. A lot of these secondary pieces that these teams have, you know, Kendra, we've talked about Denver and Memphis specifically in the West. A lot of these contending team rosters are built through the draft. You know, I mean, John Morant was a high draft pick, but let's not forget Memphis also drafted Brandon Clark. They also drafted Desmond Bane. They made a deal for Steven Adams. You know, they a team like Denver drafted Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. when healthy, use draft picks, draft capital that they had to go out and get Aaron Gordon. So a lot of this has to do with draft capital that the Mavericks unfortunately have never been good at. The Mavericks,
but those are high picks.
Those are high picks. Yes, I agreed. And the Mavericks were too good too fast, right? With Luka. I mean, that's ultimately what the Porzingis deal was. The Mavericks were too good too fast because Luka is such a generational talent that at that point, I think the front office had a decision to make, and that was, okay, do we be patient and do we build, or do we just go for it? And they went for it with a guy who ideally on paper was the perfect fit next to Luka, and a rim protector, a guy who can step out and hit the three, a great pick and roll partner. And what killed the Mavericks was not the deal for Porzingis. The deal was fine. It was A, the contract and not giving him the injury protections, giving him a max deal when he had just torn his ACL, knowing that you're already going to lose a year, but then also giving the two first round picks, to the Knicks. And that really, if you look at a lot of the deals that have happened in the NBA the last few years, I mean, the Donovan Mitchell deal, even just this year, the Donovan Mitchell deal, the Rudy Gobert deal, look at all the first round picks that are being thrown around from team to team. You have to have draft capital to make a deal now for a superstar because free agency is such a crapshoot. Players, do they leave teams now? Do they, I feel like we're kind of in that era now where most players are re-signing with their teams. You don't see these marquee free agents leaving, for greener pastures anymore. It feels like a lot of high profile players are re-signing with the teams that they're currently playing for. So by trading Porzingis now and getting a guy, getting guys like Dinwiddie and Bertans, Nico Harrison talked about the flexibility of being able to move two contracts instead of one, and how, you can make salaries match up, a little bit better. I believe he came out before the season said that this is a transition year. Right. I mean, this is a year where we have to see what we've got on this roster. We've got movable contracts now. Let's see where this goes. And now we can, it's a little bit easier to make money match. Neither Bertans or Dinwiddie has missed significant time whereas when Porzingis was missing significant time, nobody knew kind of what the value, what kind of value he had. In a year like this, you could probably get a lot more for him because he is having a good year in Washington. And it's just unfortunate. But at the time, you really didn't know what you could get for a guy who was out 50% of the games you were playing. And so now you've got a guy, Spencer Dinwiddie, who's shown that A, he's back from his ACL surgery. B, he's a legitimate threat in terms of a really, really good offensive player. A good three-point shooter is now shooting a career high from three. And a guy who, like Landon said, can be maybe a number three option, but more so a really, really, really good sixth man for somebody off the bench. So, over the next month or so, the hope is that the front office starts surveying the landscape and saying, okay, who's in need of a guy like this? And what kind of pieces can we throw in to make a deal work? And this is kind of, I know Landon hates rumors, so I'm not going to say, any specific names, of course, but this is kind of the time where we start hearing that stuff, right? Where the X team is interested in Y player. And so you start thinking like, okay, where does that match up and where could the Mavericks utilize some of this newfound flexibility that they have to really improve the roster alongside Luka? Because at the end of the day, it's what players fit with Luka. If Luka plays this way, right, what players fit him? And it'll be interesting, like we've talked about, with getting Dorian and Josh back over these next few weeks as we get into the trade deadline. How does their return affect the roles of other players, and how does the front office evaluate that going into trade season?
I really don't see the, and Kendra, I'll get your thoughts on Shanavaz's comments, but I really don't see the Mavs making big moves. I really see them making incremental moves, like maybe solidify their bench, like Kendra pointed out. But the reason that is because I think they really want to get into the offseason. Like you said, Sean, it was like a transition year. And the reason for that is because the Knicks will finally, if the Mavs keep up being the top five team in the West, which they currently are, which they should be blessed after this road trip. is because the Knicks can finally use that pick, that second pick. So then you're looking at being able to have draft capital again, being able to have what four first rounds that you can pick, or you a few second rounds as well, instead of just saying, we don't have the players that they're looking for to get this star or get this all-star caliber player in. And I think that's really what you'll see. You'll probably see a bench piece. So, Kendra, I'll ask you, what's your thoughts on the roster construction as it pertains to trade deadline?
Well, there are definitely some, I would think.
What's your wish list?
My wish list?
Yeah, you play Nico for a sec. I mean, you can name names, but let's just play.
Is this realistic, or is this like 2K Kendra, like how she would set up her roster with the Mavs?
That's why I like realistic, because rumors are all, it's just hearsay just to get clickbait. And I pretty much like seeing something build into fruition before I start talking about it. At least one of the top national reporters, instead of just the clickbait reporters, to make you go look at their website. But Kendra, just play Nico for a second. What would you want realistically at the trade deadline for the Mavericks?
I would. No, I'm not. I'm going to try to be as realistic as possible. I'm always open for negotiations, because that's what GMs do.
Okay, so Sean Navaz is the opposing GM.
Okay.
I'm excited. Yeah, and you're Nico Harrison. Let's play a game for a little bit.
All right. Sean Navaz. I heard you need some shooters. I have two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have Hardaway and I have Bertans. So, who do I get in return? I would like a
Bogdanovich.
Bojan. Sorry.
If I'm the GM for Detroit, I'm saying no to that. Well, here's why. If I'm Detroit, I'm a young team. I don't need to be taking on that much salary for a guy who's got an expiring contract. I'll do it if you throw in a first round pick.
Absolutely not.
Sorry. Hanging up the phone.
All right, fine. I'll call the other GM. Who's on the team that I can? So it's really hard. It's really hard because you cannot give up your best. You can't give up your best players. I wasn't even thinking about C. Wood. In my mind, he's untouchable. But as far as like Powell,
unless you can't sign him. If you can't sign him, you have to get something for him. That's the first in my mind, honestly. The next 3 weeks, 2 weeks, January 18th. The next 2 weeks need to be focused on signing Christian Wood. If we do not sign Christian Wood, the 2-3 weeks after that need to be focused on trading Christian Wood. Because you can't go through what you went through last year with Jalen Brunson and hope you get to free agency and hope you sign him, because somebody's going to swoop in under you and realize his value and he's going to leave.
Do you think they're going to do it? For the Mavericks to forgive them for not signing Brunson.
They have to. I don't see any plausible way where that. The Mavericks can make that same mistake again. You absolutely cannot go into this offseason having Christian Wood either unsigned or traded. Like, it's just asinine from a front office perspective.
So who would you give up as a Mavs GM?
Everybody's expendable in my mind.
other than Luka. The players I would want to keep more so than anybody else, I think I want Dorian Finney-Smith on the team. I would love to keep Christian Wood if we can re-sign him. I would love to keep Jaden Hardy, and I would love to keep. I'm excited to see the growth of Josh Green. And I think that having young pieces like that also helps. Green and Hardy are you know, kind of on that Luka timeline, you know, in terms of age. Mm-hmm. Everyone, but to be honest, if somebody calls and make an offer, I'm listening on everything except Luka. I'm not going to shy away and say, you know what, Luka's got good chemistry with Dwight Powell. You know what will help build chemistry? More wins and a ring.
So on that note, I mean, that's obviously what we'll be talking about over the next few weeks as the trade deadline comes. But final words for this episode, with Josh Green and Dorian Finney-Smith coming back, even if they don't come back tonight, they're coming back soon, obviously. And I'll start with you, Kendra. What did those additions do for this team? I mean, obviously you can just say defense, but how big of a change or of a need is Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green for this team from what you've seen in the past few weeks?
Well, it gives them more depth. You know, the rotation is better. And it gives Kidd more options. And so, and also because they know their role, everyone else can go back to theirs. And like what you were saying, Landon, you know, everyone's kind of playing like one, two levels up than maybe, you know, outside of what they're used to. So now they can go back to, you know, what they're used to. And so I think that would help settle, at least on the defensive side, it will settle some players, you know. And so I think having Finney-Smith and Green back, I think that it will do that. And also they're just energy players, you know. Defensively, they're energy players, and that cannot be undervalued. And the Mavericks desperately are in need of that. So I think, you know, off the top of my head, I think that's what they'll bring.
I like it. And welcome back, Kendra. Welcome back. It's good to have you back.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back.
We missed you.
Yes, for sure. And we miss Ian. But Sean Avaz, who we don't miss.
Sadly.
No, Sean Avaz, you know we love you. Sean Avaz, what's your final words on Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green coming back, hopefully tonight, but just overall in general?
It's like the perfect time because this team is struggling. You get back two of your three best defenders. You know, Dallas should have beaten, you know, a lot of the teams that they've played the last few games, and defensively is why they haven't, unfortunately. You know, not only defensively, but you two guys that really, you know, Dorian has struggled a little bit from the three-point line, but we've seen improvements as the season was going on. We've seen Josh Green's offensive game really, really improve before he got hurt. So I'm excited to see how both of them mesh back into what the Mavericks are doing and really help to solidify what their defensive identity is. But I'll agree with Kendra 100%. It's rotational depth. I mean, Mavericks are playing like six guys right now, all like 38, 39 minutes a night. So having two other players come back and really allow guys like Luka and Spencer and even Hardaway Jr., you know, take breaks and get some rest and kind of re-energize, you know, on the sidelines I think hopefully should help, you know, as they kind of, you know, get back into the rhythm of things after missing time.
Yeah, I'm excited, to be honest. I'm really excited. And you wouldn't think that for two just good rotation players, but it like you said, it's time. It's time to get some wins because they've been blessed. They've really been blessed to lose some of these games, and they're still fifth in the West, and they're still reaching distance where they could go up. So just having some energy guys, like Kendra said, come back and bring some energy to these games. And it gave you a chance, even though they lost those games, it gave you a chance to look at Jaden Hardy. And I think that's the biggest thing that I'm excited for, is to see Jaden Hardy and Josh Green together, hopefully together instead of just one at a time. It'll be nice to see some youth on this team and build together, develop together, because I feel like they're a perfect duo together off the bench. I think they have room to grow, and I think they would definitely play off each other well, because Josh Green, he's like a defensive player. He's really a 3-and-D guy who can play make, and that's and then Jaden Hardy's just a scorer. Like, he could score in his sleep. And I feel like those two, and they both have athleticism, so I think they both can play off each other very well, and I'm excited to see those two play. Hopefully they can, because they need to, because Luka can, and I said this earlier, he cannot be playing all these minutes. He cannot be playing this high usage. Like, I would like to see his minutes drop by 5 minutes. I know that's a lot, but it's the regular season. It's not playoffs. He shouldn't be playing 38, 40 minutes every night. And I would like Dinwiddie, even though he's playing great, but he's playing too much. Like, he shouldn't be playing, you know, mid-30s. He should be playing 30 minutes a night. And 28, he should be around 30, and Luka should be around 35 every single night, because you have Jaden Hardy and you have Josh Green. And now I'm coming back, and you need to give those guys minutes and just give a different pace, like we talked about in this podcast, just a different energy and different athleticism, because quiet as it kept, those two are probably in your top five athletic players on the team, and they're the youngest. So that would make sense. So I would definitely want to see those two play together, hopefully tonight. All right. Well, that was our podcast episode. Definitely appreciate y'all joining in, tuning in to another great episode. Kendra, Shanavaz, till next time, we'll see y'all. Goodbye, everyone.